Hi Calvin. Yeah, we have a much better recording again here. The noise was creeping into the signal. And you were just talking about the way Tetrionics makes it possible to see how triangles turning the one way, triangles turning the other way, they interlink. You can interpret them as electrical circuits. You can actually correlate that to the way people have their mental inertia and also their bias in their belief systems. And then you started to go into the, let's call it the mystical part of it. Earlier you had already spoken about the link between the psychology and the physiology of the body in what's commonly known as the chakra system. There are vortex systems with attuned frequencies operating via specific hormones acting via the organ glands to tune the organs in their Möbius loop cycle linking the inside and the outside. But when you go to the mystical side of it, basically that is the terminology for what happens in the body but also outside of the body, where the body is seen as part of the whole. And technically you need to say that the body is the universe in inverse. The inside of the skin, you are you, and the outside of the skin connects to the universe as a whole. So it is in the skin, in the organ membrane, in the cell membrane, that we have this attunement between the parts and the whole at every level. And mysticism is basically that understanding which tries to describe that. And a lot of people are afraid to talk about that. But then of course there's a lot of people who are afraid to see that our body is basically an electric dynamic of information processing. For you that's already very clear. So I'd really like you to tell some more about how you link that up to the mystical understanding of the different cultures.
Haven't gone into it a great deal myself, apart from obviously what I saw as I went through. There were certain things like the Star of David, Kabbalah, things like that, that popped out or were presented to me by other people. They saw things in my work that I'd missed, but there are just some things that are inescapable. Obviously the most obvious thing, which got a lot of reaction, died down, is the fact that if you take a Planck quanta with its positive and negative charges and then you put one on top of the other, two triangles, you end up with the Star of David. And that arrangement pops up in a lot of places, including carbon atoms themselves. So for anti-Semitic people, that's just another thing, another cross, nail in the cross, to say you're just pushing a Jewish agenda. Not only is your science wrong, and it's pseudoscience, but now you're trying to throw religion into the mix with science. And we know religion and science will never agree. Well, I tend to burr up there because obviously my surname for one, but mainly because they're making assumptions on stuff that they haven't read or understood. But some of these connections are completely inescapable. You can't avoid them. You use the geometry, they're there. I don't ram it down other people's throats as to what's right in the religious, what they take out of it in religious context or spiritual context. I just simply ask them to read the work that I put together on a purely rigidly scientific basis. And I've said, if there's a Star of David in there, so be it. If there's a field in there that can explain chakras, so be it. There is a lot more to be discovered than what I know of at the moment, because every day I sit down and every time I try and expand my knowledge, or if I come across something that I can't quite get my head around, I learn something new. And it hasn't stopped in 6 years now. And I don't expect it to stop probably until my death. I guess what I'm saying in a nutshell is there's more things to be discovered than what has been discovered. And if you, my approach to science, obviously when I did this, I grabbed the triangle and said, what can I do with it? Now, that could not have been the first time in human history that a person on the planet said, does a triangle apply to physics? And can it explain something? But it turned out to be the first time where somebody grabbed that gut belief that they were onto something and doggedly pursued it. Went past the Star of David connections, went past the metaphysical ideas, but at the same time drew on inspiration from all different facets. It doesn't have to be, there's a lot of old information from the Greeks, the Egyptians, and Sumerians even, that can apply very accurately to modern physics. What they lacked was experimental evidence. What I had was their information, their writings and teachings, my ideas to use the triangle, and all the results from modern physics and its current mathematical approach. And that allowed me to weave the tapestry that we've got now in tetrionics.
Yeah, so this, of course, is also the edge where people get confused. When they don't realize that science is a belief system, and that science essentially helps us to address and access and understand and work with the unknown.
Yeah.
And as you said, the Sumerians and the Egyptians, they already had a lot of understanding of this. They described it each in their own manner. And in fact, they were able to work with it in their own manner.
And with completely math. Base 60 for the Sumerians, their mathematics view looked nothing like ours, but they knew the Pythagorean theorem, as did the Greeks, but they chose to use a base 60 mathematics. We only used base 10 after it had been introduced by the Arabs from the Indians. We're still learning and improving our own information as we make discoveries in science. But as we've mentioned a few times, we have this, and I suppose every civilization or every stage of humanity was the same. We have this belief that our current level of science is the most advanced that it will ever be. We've made it so complex that it couldn't possibly be wrong or reinterpreted in any other way. And if somebody comes along and says the world is square, a cube built out of triangles, the reaction's going to be obvious. But just because one viewpoint is different to what you've been taught does not necessarily mean that it's wrong. It's just different.
There are other examples. For example, Abdul Hakim Awyan was one of those traditional Egyptian knowledge keepers, and he knew that in Egypt sound was used for healing, and that a lot of the temples were actually built as specific attuned resonators for sonic attunement in the body. And as Michael Tellinger also points out from the stuff he looked into, phonons, which are particles of sound, can actually travel at speed way beyond the speed of light. A lot of that is known, a lot of that has been known by many cultures. The difficulty is always that people in every culture describe it in the language that they have, in the symbols that they can think up, with the, say, the logic and the grammar that they're able to conceive. And in that sense, the language that they use becomes the tool, the instrument, the interface for sharing ideas between people.
But for educating them.
Yeah.
And this is where the dogma creeps in, because you get to a stage where it explains it so well, and your teacher has taught you this way, and you've explained it this way, and suddenly growth or acceptance in other viewpoints becomes very hard to tolerate or to accept because it challenges what you were taught. But as you say, quite rightly, it's purely a construct to try and make sense of the world as we see it and perceive it.
Yeah, and of course the language is merely the instrument and not the understanding. And the dogmatic people, say the fundamentalists, they don't have the understanding. They only have the story about it. And I often compare that to bedtime stories for children. Most of the bedtime stories for children, the fairy tales, are very advanced, very deep insights in how the psyche works. For example, the king in the fairy tales, it's the pineal gland. The cord around the king is the hypophysis. The population around is the organ system. And the landscape is the reality that we live in. There are specific stages of decision taking from the pineal gland to the hypophysis to the organ glands to the body cells. And they are actually the unfolding from a point to a line to a plane to a volume, a dimensional unfolding of decision taking. But if you don't see that's what's happening, then even when you hear the stories, you will not grasp that you're actually being told how to use your own brain and mind. And I like the work of Laird Scranton, who wrote the books about the science of the Dogon. And in that, he comes up with that same formulation that there was two ways of transmitting information in the culture. One, the popular stories, the fairy tales, the songs, and the rituals of the feasts in the year, which everybody knew. And the other part was the knowledge of the priests, which gave the other part of it, as a result of which it was able to understand and decode that information to a different level. And it's funny because when you look at the basis of it, you can see that it is the same principle of that of a hologram. You have to follow the graphic plate with the collective cultural understanding, which looks very fuzzy, and then you have the knowledge of the priests, which is the laser beam by which you can have the interaction with that photographic plate and pull out the clear holographic image. But that only works if you see that you need to have that interplay. If you have only the half of the story, you can never uncode the key. By the way, Joseph Atwell looked into the New Testament and saw that in that same manner, it was, let's call it a carbon copy of the story of the war against the Jews as written by Josephus Flavius. And that in that they used that same technique of offsetting one story against the other to, in this case, encode a hidden meaning. I bring up this parallel, this metaphor, because the cultural collective knowledge which people have, let's call it the mythical knowledge of science, is, let's call it the outer level, the common level of the understanding, while the internal, say the language of the priests, is which is kept by the scientists who actually do the innovative work. So E equals MC squared, which is the Lorentz story and the Leibniz story recapitulated by Einstein, lost its meaning because people only had mythical meaning of it, that yes, it was important, but they lacked the understanding of what the story was really about. Like the fairy tales, they're not about the kings and the queens and the dragons and the land, but they are about decision taking and the reflexes, the dragon representing the reflex system. In this case, the E equals C squared is about how interfacing works. In fact, as Uri Fiedelman pointed out, the equation of E equals MC squared or E equals M v squared or I equals omega squared r, that they're all the same equation of how our brain orders information. They're not equations of physics, they're not descriptions or formulations or recipes for nature, but they are reflections on how our brain processes information.
Yeah, the result on
yeah,
energy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like the footprints in the sand of how our brain works.
Hmm.
And you've done the other way around. In a way, you created the, let's call it the prayer wheel of the Tibetans. You created an instrument that if you play with it, if you twist it around, like a kaleidoscope, it starts to function as a focusing lens and shows that the kaleidoscopic image that we had in science, fragmented in physics, chemistry, electromagnetics, and informatics, is actually one and the same story at different levels with different degrees of involvement. And then, of course, people have a difficulty to understand that. Why I'm asking this question, why I'm asking you reflections on this, is because I see that there are people who will have difficulty to understand that because they don't start to use the tool as yet. It's like they hear you play the flute, but they do not realize that if they want to hear that music, all they need to do is pick up the flute themselves. Mm-hmm. And you've already built the flute. And you've already shown that once you start to play with a player wheel, it starts to unfold the understanding. It helps the mind to sort information in such a manner that you can actually see that information is fractalic, that the universe is a hologram. And with this tool in hand, it's like an inverse Swiss pocket knife. Everything which seems to be different just has one simple handle.
Yeah.
And that is also what comes out in what you describe. You started with basically electricity, magnetism. You discovered physics, chemistry, biology, cosmology. And you discovered that it was all the same. And for what I see through the work I did, everything you do also applies for the physiology, the sociology, the psychology, and the ecology. But that means that it also can help people understand that what religions described is a different aspect of what science described, which is our experience of participation in creation.
Yeah,
you focused on the physics, but in doing it, you experienced, say, the psychology, let's call it the mystical. You know it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's true, and it was pointed out to me the other day when I sent some information to Indian string theorists. He was asking about squared numbers and things like that. I sent him my ebook on math, and the discussion was about infinity, eternity, things like that, all the metaphysical, immaterial fields, and how mathematics can be extended out as pure mathematics to learn things. And his comment was, you've done great work, you've shown relationships that I didn't know existed between the equilateral geometry and everyday highly developed math like Fermat's theorem and Euler's relationships and things like that, showed them in a completely different light. But what he wanted to do was concentrate on, it's a classic example. He could see the connection with the geometry, he knew his own math, and he knew that there was a lot of benefit, but because my work in explaining the math only covered math, he didn't want to accept my work because he could fiddle around with his equations and come up with something that didn't apply to physics, something that was purely mathematical, a speculation, and the discussion was infinity. And I cornered him on one point, and that's where it ended. But it was another classic example of people learning one system, being able to see the benefit, but not fully grasping the power of what can be done, because as I pointed out to him, there's nothing to stop you learning the basics of my geometry, writing it mathematically and using those shapes to invent an entirely new form of mathematics. And at first he didn't follow it, but then I pointed out that the shapes of all the subatomic particles are platonic solids that nobody, despite hundreds of years of building models themselves, nobody has drawn the shapes that I've given for the subatomic models, and yet they're platonic models made out of tetrahedra. So they should, and there's an infinite amount that can be done, but even the most basic ones hadn't shown up in any other textbook. So there would have been a case where if he'd taken those topologies, he could have written a geometric paper on those geometries and all their geometric properties in math, and probably gotten a Nobel Prize for discovering a new class of particles.
Yeah.
What? But the answer came about geometry, yeah. Not the math. If he tried to approach it from the math, it would have taken even longer still.
It reminds me of this story of, say, the biblical parable, that people were kicked out of paradise for putting on the fig leaf, the masks, the models, the bias. And if you want to get back into paradise, you have to put away the fig leaf, the model, the math, the equations, the bias, the preconceptions. And I see that a lot in the medical paradigm, where you actually have the same, that a lot of people have diseases basically because they held on to the wrong belief. And in homeopathy, they have this very nice way of resolving those problems, because every fixed belief which is held in the body actually superimposes, let's call it a different stance. Somebody is standing up straight, but there is a shock, and suddenly they find themselves crouched. It doesn't connect up to what they were thinking that they were standing before. So in the body there is now double image, and everything that is processed in the body is processed by that double image, the standing person and the crouched person. And what homeopathy does is it feeds the body the information of that crouched situation. Say, well, remember that this is there too. When you look at the wave field around the body, the aura, the behavior, the interactions with others, you can see that there's a crouched person sitting in there somewhere. As a result, the body information fields connect up to this memory of the crouched situation. The two patterns become one, and the crouched situation becomes resolved. Acupuncture does that in a slightly different way. It plays with the interaction points in the environment, resetting the calibration of the attunement between the inside and the outside. But in all of those cases, you can see that aging, for example, results by an accumulation of many of these shock events, which are kept as, say, a photographic image of an undigested moment in the past. And when there's more and more and more of them, the free flow of information processing gets hindered. And as a result, aging takes place or diseases take place, but the pattern is always the same. And it is quite the same as people who have built this snail house of their belief, but they discover that they are too afraid to get out of that snail house and to do, let's call it the biblical thing of go back to their childhood openness. In that terminology, it said, well, if you're not like a little child, you cannot see how the heavens work. If you work through your preconceptions, then you cannot open up to the alternatives. And it's that notion also that if people have something in their hand and they're willing to let go of whatever model they hold in their hand, then they cannot, they don't have an open hand to take on the model that you offer them.
And equally, what, looking at the analogy of the human robot body, organic body, and the quantum brain and cloud computing soul, even though they're three distinct items, they are all interrelated. Your body, if it curls up, you must have, it has an effect, and your consciousness must be able to recognize that state. So as you say, if your body then straightens out, but your electromagnetic field still has this imprint of a curled up body that it's hanging onto for whatever reason, fear or anxiety or something that's happened, or a state that they just feel more comfortable in, the human body will react because it's receiving the instructions via the brain from that field to interact with the environment. And you end up with this conflicted situation where you've got the human BEM field, the human soul, thinking or retaining information about a state that no longer exists, and the human body saying, well, do I act on that or don't I? And that's where you get these conflicts, as you say, the disease, the malfunctioning bodies, the tremors, things that don't go quite right. It's could be simply a communication problem between the brain, between the BEM field, the brain, and the body itself. Or you could have a more basic problem. It might be something where the brain, over a period of time, begins to wear down through DNA coding or through Alzheimer's, things like that. Palsies, where it didn't get enough oxygen to form properly. And then in the case of palsy, there's a classic, you've got a body that's unable to perform properly, like a Mars rover that's landed and broken one wheel. It doesn't work perfectly, but the brain still functions okay, and the soul is still perfect, but it's trapped inside this limping organic robotic body. In the worst cases, obviously, the brain can be impaired as well, causing even more effort. But as it's been shown time and time again, if you can give these people with palsy access to computer pads and other ways that their limited motions can then connect with the outside world, they can form great sentences, have great conversations, and they're not the people that you think from the judging of their robotic bodies, their biological bodies. It's that there's a distinct disconnect or distinct boundaries between the mind, the body, the soul. They are separately functioning, they have their own entities, and part of the miracle of life is not just the engineering of a human body, but the development of the brain and the soul that connects to make each individual what they are. And the miracle that it happens time and time over, again and again and again. Each time, a unique result. But you're right, what the brain can perceive can have a huge impact on the physical body, irrespective of what the physical body is actually enduring.
Yeah, and I like this the model of palsy, or in neurology it's called the lock-in syndrome. Basically, there's one of the interfaces between the inside and the outside which no longer works, and as you said, it works at all of those levels. And in the same way, what happens as a lock-in syndrome within people, physiologically or psychologically or sociologically or ecologically, also happens between cultures, and also happens in the interaction between other people. And it is at that level that this is a very nice example, because it is at this level that the cue can be found for the way that other people can better understand what you have found, what you offered them, and that for them to be able to take you up on that offer, there is a need to let go of that past, which often has been hammered into them by education, schooling, and dependency of whichever kind, as a result of which they believe that they're unsafe without that belief system which they have carried over from somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, like often people will think that they're just plain stupid because they do something that isn't within social norms, or they can't, their eye-hand coordination is off, not as good as others. So they're talk down to, and they build this mental picture that they're inferior in some way, and that affects them all their life, to the point where they may well be able to catch balls perfectly well, but because they never had access to glasses to correct their vision, they're unable to. And, yeah. And it may be so pronounced to the fact, to the point that when you do give them glasses, they still mentally don't perform properly at catching the ball, because in their mind they've already convinced themselves that they can't do it physically, where it's a failing of the body itself that caused the problem. And it sort of harps back to, if you think you can do it, you can do it sort of attitude, things like that. But the important takeaway is, if you take that leap of faith we talked about in the previous discussions and accept tetrionics with the basis of inertial quantum loops that give us inertial mass and things like that, and that there are fields, there are EM fields that are made up of equilateral energy momenta geometries, and that there are pieces of matter made up of energy momenta topologies, and that's the distinction between mass and matter. If you take it to that point, you realize that the last, I don't know how long it's 50, 60, 80, 100 years of research on the human soul and the brain, how we think, has been aimed at the wrong organ. We've been looking at the brain for short-term memory storage and long-term, and saying, well, test the occipital lobes and the prefrontal cortex for visual stimulation and things like that, because that's where our processing's going, so that must be where we think it is, when in fact they should get their PET scanners, make them bigger, and start to map the field around the human body and how it's changing, instead of the brain itself, but map this BEM field, the soul, the conscious soul of the human body, map it, because that's where the decisions are being taken, that's where our consciousness resides. Mapping the human brain the way we are, and I think I've mentioned this before, is no different than starting up your computer with MS Word on it, or actually with MS Word on the cloud drive, the cloud version of the software, and you start typing while a scientist looks at the inside of your computer case at the computer processor and sees what's happening as you're typing and using MS Word. And what's he trying to do? He's trying to map the electrical motions around the PC core to figure out not only what you're typing, but how MS Word itself was coded as software. He's looking in the wrong spot, and he's looking at the wrong interactions by studying the brain. The brain is just simply a processing unit with short-term memory, a bit of RAM. We should be looking at the field, the chakra, the aura that people talk about in metaphysics, that sort of normal physics. We should be looking at them and understanding how they store energy and how they act as our conscious soul, not only to understand the soul, but also to see how that soul affects our bodies. And that will allow us to advance science remarkably. Just a simple understanding like that. And I didn't come to that conclusion of BEM fields because it sounds nice and because I wanted to have auras or whatever. It came about purely because the energy, mass energy that goes into making matter is simply that. Thermal heat, EM waves, starlight, all these other forms that what Tesla would have called immaterial waves are all secondary to matter. You take away all those fields from matter, and what you're left with is matter at absolute zero, a frozen chunk at minus 270 degrees Celsius, and that is the paper models that you make using my templates. So all the intelligence, all the dynamics of life itself must be in these VEM fields of human bodies. The difference between us and dogs, who knows precisely? My guess may be that our BEM field can simply hold way more information and may be more complex in design than that of a dog, allowing us to have conscious awareness, store more information. It may turn out that the dog can only hold the equivalent of 3 months worth of memory, and then it's full and it purges when it sleeps.
Yeah, it's also a bit like what you mentioned before about a palsy or the lock-in syndrome. As simpler life forms, they have less ability to express what goes on, simply because the hardware, let's call it that, does not have the precision modulation to be able to go into higher harmonics of the information. But in essence, a dog is not more stupid than a human. It's just that the compaction and the coherencing of the information has limitation, as a result of which the same principles lead to, let's call it, more coarse pixelation of what happens.
Mm-hmm. Does dogs and other animals have pineal glands, don't they?
Well, it's not even that, because the pineal gland is simply a representation of the zygote in a later phase of morphology. And so single cellular process organisms already have a pineal gland, because in that sense they are the pineal gland. But what you do see is that there's a difference in the way that field around the first cell can go through the fractal of unfolding and create a hologram of stabilization, and as a result an interaction with the environment. And as you said, when that electrical field collapses, that is what you find when people die. The conversation between the cells stops, the software collapses, and as a result the hardware collapses. You have no better proof than that to show that it is not the hardware. But one of the problems we have in this development of science is that when science started, the guys in Rome told the scientists that they should not look into life, consciousness, the soul and spirit, because the guys in Rome wanted to keep a monopoly on that. And now it's too late for that. Now it's very clear that from physics to chemistry to electromagnetism up to informatics, you can see that in the body it is an electric process, it is a magnetic process, it is a radio wave process, and it is ultimately an information process.
And it's a whole coordination.
Exactly. And once you do the thinking inside out, everything turns back onto the basis.
But also, if you have you can get shot in the leg and die, right? Of shock, or just a big enough shot that would normally say an amputation of a leg. It's not just a shock, but when that person dies, it's a whole body shutdown. All the cells stop communicating, and I view that as the human consciousness, the human soul, is the field that it creates and that it resides in, is also allowing additional communication through the body and from one cell's fields to another cell's field back to the human body itself. So it's like a secondary communication field. You disrupt that field, and that you can do that with huge electrical shocks.
Yeah, and the body the other way around. If people know hypnosis, basically they are able to use the BEM field, the soul field, to shift the mind field, to shift the body field. So when somebody is shot in the leg, they can actually, through their mind, change the circulation in their leg, as a result of which the cells locally can recover from their shock and can reboot, let's call it that. But it does require that people have experience with this, which is why all the religions always say, okay, let's try meditation for medication. Once you start to understand that the cells are conscious, and that at the cell level they already know what they do. At the organ level, they do that as colonies. At the body level, they do that as a colony of colonies. And that's what the Chinese medical system calls the Shen. Basically, it's the local processing software, local information, or the soul of that part of the body. And when a part of the body is in shock or doesn't function, you can actually restore that information. Psychic healing is about that, in part. Spiritual healing is all about that. So spiritual healers, they work with the BEM field, the bioelectromagnetic material field, and from there they say restart the conversation between the cells. Basically, the cells are in shock, they're confused, they're in a daze, they don't know what to do. If that takes too long, the circulation collapses.
You've destroyed their communication system that they've been using all the time. Suddenly they have to switch to backup systems.
Yeah.
It's like cutting the taking out all the radio and TV stations in Brisbane. Everyone's in a state of shock. Everyone's going different places. But eventually, they'll start to click in and they'll say, well, it's 12 o'clock. We should all be going to lunch, or we should be going home. And it'll fall onto backup systems. And then when the radio comes back on, everybody synchronizes back up and the city performs normally. But the big thing that I hadn't known for all the time until I started doing my biology readings, and particularly this idea of the conscious BEM field, the soul, yeah, versus the brain as a quantum PC, was there's a group of people, and I may have the wrong word here, but I think it's hydrocephaly, where it's not water on the brain, it's where the brain more or less doesn't exist in the most extreme cases. All you're left with is the brain stem and the pineal gland and the very early development brain. On the current models of the brain, that person should be almost vegetative, if not dead. They shouldn't be able to function, shouldn't be able to do a thing, because they've got no way to process light from their eyes. They have no way to make sense of things they can hear, and no way to control their muscles. Yet these people, which I think the number is something like 10 or 15% of the brain is all that remains, in some have impairment, but there are extreme cases of them where they're just as intelligent and they're no different to anyone else, despite the fact that 90% of their brain never grew. It's not a case of it being removed. It was never there when they were born, which backs up the fact that what we call our soul, our intellect, and our ability to do high-level functioning and reasoning is not in our brain. It's in this BEM field. The neuroscientists will never agree with that, because that does not fit their model. A couple hundred years from now, they'll probably come around to our way of thinking. But that's the best example I have. Just another one where Tetrionics says, I can explain why that works. It works because our conscious soul really is an electromagnetic field, and what's left of this poor person's brain has sufficient power to do all the autonomic functions and still process signals that are given, stimuli that come in, and process instructions from the soul in order to function like a normal person. But you can't explain it using the normal model of the map, with the brain being the seat of our intelligence.
Yeah, correct. And this is neurologists have difficulty to get out of that, but that's precisely the exploration of our whole conversation now. How can people understand something that they cannot understand by the model that they use? And the people who use physics have difficulty to understand Tetrionics, because they already have the model clutched in their hand. They're unwilling to let go of it. The neurologists have been given a model, like mothers give a baby a pacifier to have them clasp something by reflex in their hands. But in embryology, it's very clear that the brain originated from the core of the body. Like the heart came from the periphery of the body. They have been swapped around, so essentially the brain functionally still sits right between the organs. It essentially is an extension of the connective tissue, which means that you're not dealing with the brain, but you're dealing with the whole connective tissue. The connective tissue is a very advanced collagen electrodynamic material for electric circulation, so that at that level basically you're dealing with the say the conductors on the motherboard of the computer in which the software runs. But like with the computer, it is not just the circulation of the electricity within those conductors on the motherboard, but associated with them is also the electromagnetic field. And neurologists start to understand that, but it has been very long time ago since Carl Pribram pointed out that the brain works as a hologram, and it has been 100 years ago since Max Planck pointed out that there is something like a quantum. And it is the educational system which basically limits how people pick up that information.
Yeah.
And that's also why in the previous session I asked if it would be possible to have your understanding not just in the templates that people can cut and paste the foundation of Tetrionics, but is it also possible to present it as games that people can play?
Yeah.
And so once the neurologist get that game in hand, then no matter what they are taught, the game will teach them that there is a different way to do it. Much easier than trying to persuade somebody to let go of their belief system is to invite them to explore something else without a threat.
Yeah.
And I understand that when you participate in the forums and the chat rooms, basically you participate in that manner, that you're you explore what their way of thinking is, and you explain what your way of thinking is, so that they can make a choice.
Yeah.
But for many people, that is a very advanced way of thinking. It's, if you look at the educational system, it is only in the postdoctoral degree that people in universities are allowed to think for themselves.
And then by that stage they're so focused they can't take on a broad picture like what I'm presenting, because I've had them say, you can't build an atom that looks like that. How could that possibly be an atom? explains more and is more scientifically and electrically robust than their model of an atom.
Yeah.
And when you go to explain it, you end up in these sometimes amazingly torrid discussions about things. Yeah. And it comes down to what people have been trained and what their mental map of physics is. I'm sure it's the same sort of shock that was felt by the church when Copernicus and Bruno were walking around saying, looks like we all circle the sun. It's the same profound shock. But it can't be. Look, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. It does it every day. There's no way we're circling it.
Yeah, in the same way, there are many people who believe in the superstition of money. I always call it the equivalent of Sinterklaas, Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy all rolled in one.
Yeah.
And there are all kinds of people who have belief systems from their culture. Some believe that women are inferior, some believe that women are superior. It's like a democracy. You can choose which one you want to try out. So the Earth as a whole is like one of those game boxes where you have chess and you have checkers and you have all kinds of patient games and intelligent games, and you can choose which culture you want to play. But ultimately, you're still playing with your own capacity to understand what you are yourself. And you're offering a different mirror for people to do that.
As much as we study chimpanzees with different games and experiments, there could well be advanced life forms sitting back watching us and how we figure things out and how we exist on this planet. Like I mentioned the other day, with just the quip about a daily TV show, what's happening on Earth today for the rest of the universe, to see what we're doing and whether we're going to make it or not. People are probably placing bets. Do they blow themselves up or not? The Cold War. Oh no, wait, bets are off. It's a tie.
And John Lilly came up with that. Lilly was the guy who was doing the research on the dolphins.
Right.
And stopped when he realized that the Navy basically only wanted to use the dolphins as kamikaze torpedo the deliverers for submarines.
For the mines, yeah.
And then he had already discovered that there is a very advanced intelligence in the dolphins, in the same way that Jane Goodall with the apes discovered that when they learn sign language, they are very clear on what they understand and how they can communicate, even at levels of abstraction. And again, at the moment that it becomes clear that those animals are highly intelligent, that they just lacked the means to get out of their lock-in syndrome, then other people say, well, we have to stop this research, we stop the funding, or the researchers themselves decide to do something else instead.
Maybe I should take a few of my key illustrations with the triangles and the particles down to the aquarium and show the dolphins and the chimpanzees to see how they react. They may turn out to be advanced life forms watching us.
True. And they'll go, some people are very clear on that, yeah.
That triangle. Where's he been all this time?
Yeah.
With what I know in my head now and that I've still yet to build, and I'm in the process of designing things now, 1,000 years from now, we could be having aliens sitting above us and walking around amongst us, and we would not know.
This is the case in the present already. There are quite a number of people who describe that they had that kind of interactions.
When I see those reports, I always look for triangles and the different shapes that I know for the particles. And if I were to see those triangles in a certain pattern and with circles around them, certain geometric shapes, that would be a UFO report that would make me get off my backside in Queensland here and actually take a plane trip to visit the people. The closest one I've seen so far that even came close would have been the the Wrensham or something in the UK. It was a military post, Wrensham Forest.
Yes.
That's the closest one where I've actually seen and looked at the shape of the spacecraft themselves and what they described, and could say to myself that one has possibilities. But just like I know how the Coral Castle was made, and I have a theory on how to shift all the big rocks for the pyramids, or a way to put the rocks there without actually shifting them. It's just a matter of getting your head around the physics when you do it, and that's what I want to do. I want to get this device built and running, which will then show that fusion work, that the stars work the way they're supposed to. I can then use that power to then begin levitating 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 ton blocks of steel or whatever. Make them physically levitate up off the ground so you can just push them along like an ice pokey hog on an ice rink. Yeah. And that's all the proof I need. Because when people say, how do they work? I say, I will build them and I will show people how they work. But in the meantime, I suggest you read the theory, because you've got to change your mindset from what you are now to there. Or conversely, you can keep your mindset like all the professors will, and you'll never understand how it works, but you won't be able to say it doesn't work because there it is working. But you'll never be able to explain it using your theory.
Yeah, and that's also why my first paper ever was called Human Limits to Mind-Made Models. Coming back to the levitation, yesterday I was watching a presentation of Michael Tellinger. He's the South African archaeologist. And in that presentation, he showed a video clip of, in this case, styrofoam, that's very light, but being levitated by the interaction of two sound waves.
Uh-huh.
And connecting that to some of the artifacts that they had found in Babylonian temples, commemorating the building of those temples. And basically two ice cone shaped rocks, which, as he said, was also what two children had seen when Coral Castle was built in as the instrument for the levitation of the rocks. So once you get a different understanding, of course, the different understanding requires the different understanding of gravity. It requires the understanding that gravity is an interaction process between mass working as matter.
You've got the matter that's gravitationally attracting other forms of matter, but then all forms of matter have an electromagnetic field that they create, right? And that field has the energy momentum, the equilateral triangles in those fields, some point in the same direction as gravity. So they work with it and enhance it. But there are more fields, more triangles, energy momentum pointing out EM fields than there are pointing in. And those pointing outward ones show you that if you put a high enough electrostatic field around an object, you can lift it. 1 coulomb, and this is, well, 2 coulombs separated apart. If you generated a full coulomb of charge on anything, that's enough to lift 9 million tons. It's a huge force. You don't need anything like that. And the proof in the pudding is I won't lift styrene blocks. I'll be lifting 20-ton granite blocks and things like that. And I'll be moving them around with one finger. And I'll have kids moving them around with one finger. All you need to do is generate enough electrostatic charge. And if you look at Coral Castle, despite he used a Ford flywheel, which has got a pretty pattern on it, ignore that. The flywheel is just there to generate a huge voltage. It runs away in copper cables, which the copper cables have been found, to the blocks that he wanted to levitate at night. So then he starts up the motor, the current runs to the blocks, and they develop this charge. The tripod that you see in those pictures has had everyone stumped for ages, all sorts of theories. The tripod's there for one reason and one reason only. It's to be placed around the block that he wants to levitate and lift it up off the ground so there's no ground connection, so that when the current from the generator goes to the block, it's not going into the earth, because you'll note the poles are wooden blocks and all the rest. He winches it up, only has to be an inch or so off the ground, just so that it's up off the ground floating. He then applies the electric charge, builds it up, and that electrostatic charge then means he'll know it's there, because the rope will get slack. You unhook the block and tackle, and you move that 20-ton or 100-ton rock to wherever you want it to be. You want it to go up 20 feet, put more power into it, and it will levitate higher. You don't need anything else. You just need a generator, copper wire to run it, and get whatever you want to float up off the ground in the first place.
And that's also what Tom Bearden described. That as soon as you create a short circuit, you actually lose the potential.
You lose it. As soon as that short circuited, the energy within the electrostatic charges that you've when you do all the work in a generator, all that work is about is separating charges. As soon as you put a wire between it, those charges just want to equalize. Second rule of tetrionics. Energy in all its forms seeks equilibrium. So as soon as there's a way for that energy to discharge between itself or the earth, it will do it. So that's why you need the block and tackle to lift the block up off the ground in the first place. So you get it levitating, you put more power if you want it to be up. Say you want it the headstone, 100-ton block at the archway. You levitate it up, you do it at night so nobody's seeing you. Get it up to where you want, move it with a stick till it's where you want it. Then all you have to do is touch it with a rod and the electrical charge flows down to earth and the block goes thud, lands where it is. You've now got a 100-ton rock that nobody can move and nobody can figure out how you should. Because all you've got left is a flywheel, which everybody assumes has got something to do with the magnetic fields. But that's the problem. They concentrate on the magnetic field. It's an electromagnetic generator. It's the charge that's the key to doing all of Coral Castle. And if you can generate the electrostatic charge to lift the blocks, that same electrostatic charge can be discharged and it comes out like a laser beam does, and you can cut very straight lines with it. You put the plate on one side of the rock and that you want to cut through, you put the other plate, and then you just wind up the power of the generator until it starts to arc out between those two plates, and it will cut through just as well as any commercial saw. And you don't need any big saws to cut your blocks and shape them and things like that. All explained 12 months ago.
I'd like to connect that to a proposition done by Nassim Haramein. Actually, it's a calculation which he did on the energy structure of gravitational field, but material fields as well. Basically, it leads to an insight that a material object or a material particle or a physical field is like a soap bubble in which a part of the energy creates the boundary to the environment, while the core of it contains, say, the massive amount of cosmic energy which you can find anywhere. And that, like in the body, it is all about the way that you can create such membranes, such cells, such differences between the local and the universal. And that it is at that level that you then regulate the second law of tetrionics. That when the charge discharge will try to balance itself out, if you can prevent a short circuit, then you need a membrane to basically form the buffer. And once you have that in place, which actually is also the principle which I see operating in the use of freedom of choice, then you can operate your participation in creation.
The only thing I'd add to that is that where you said you have this energy in the center of the fields, that is a greater energy. When you look at the way that the equilateral fields come together to form an EM field, it's like a starburst, or like those Christmas decorations you get that you fold out, start off as a star and you fold them back on themselves and they fan out. It's like that. Hassim draws the toroid part, which is the electric field part, but doesn't talk about the magnetic, which is where the energy is stored. And then when you look at the equilateral triangles and these quantum inductive loops, the magnetic energy stores magnetic energy, right? And that in that inductive loop, that magnetic energy is constantly trying to convert itself to electrical energy, and the electrical is constantly trying to convert itself back to magnetic, which forms that inductive loop that I talk about in all the quantum. That's inertial mass. But the important thing, that what I'm trying to get at, is that when you see a toroid, like Hassim uses a lot of, what's missing in that picture, that the toroid itself is just the electric field component. In the top, above the toroid and below the toroid, there are two magnetic fields, and they supply the energy to the electric in reality. Whereas in the fusion plants that they try and use at the moment, they just build the toroid, pump it full of plasma, and say we're creating the conditions of the sun on Earth, which is technically true, but they'll never get fusion, because fusion, you need to be able to reach the center where those magnetic fields and electric fields meet, the pinch point, as I call it. And their design will not allow that. You'll never ever get fusion. Well, fusion doesn't exist, but you'll never get a star using a toroid generator. Will not happen. Because the moment you build the toroid, you're excluding the magnetic field that's required to pinch the matter to destroy it, which is where I get the advantage, because if I build my design that I'm working on at the moment, kick it off, I'll immediately have a reactor working on a $200 budget that will outperform their multi-billion dollar experiments, and they'll immediately see where they went wrong. And that's when they can no longer say, see, I get lots of people saying, you've written all this theory, looks all very pretty, but have you made anything? Has it been tested? Can you validate it? There's hundreds of ways to validate it. I could sit with a group of committee or even Nobel scientists and show them the mistakes they've made in their current physics and observations. And I would have a dozen tests where all they have to do is go back and look at their existing work. But we're back to the mindset. They don't want to do that, because that means all their mathematical assumptions were wrong. The people in the Nobel committee that decide who get Nobel Prizes aren't likely to vote for me, because if they vote that my theory is right, it means that the Nobel Prizes they've given out for, or possibly half of the ones they've given out for the last 50 years, have been given out because nobody understood what they were talking about, and they've now turned out to be wrong.
Yeah, also, when you look at the social dynamics of inventions, then you can see, as an inventor discovered, that inventions which increase consumerism are promoted, and inventions which decrease dependency on consumerism are not funded. As with science, and in education, likewise with the Nobel Prize, there's a commercial interest at the backbone of that. But coming back to this notion of inventors who have new ideas.
Can you hear me?
We better establish a new connection. There's noise coming in.
Do another reconnection, because I really can't understand what you're saying.
Okay.